Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Amanda Harrison. She's a commercial pilot with a tremendous sense of adventure. 18 months after being diagnosed with breast cancer, she started her journey in a tiger moth, which inspired her new book, Solo to Darwin, in the footsteps of Amy Johnson. On the 11th of May 2019, she took off from Biggin Hill with the aim of flying to Darwin in 19 days, just as her idol Amy Johnson had done in 1930. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you very much, Hannah.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. So tell us about your flying journey. I understand that you started flying lessons at the age of 14. That's amazing.
I took my first flight at the age of 14. It was then quite a few years until I could afford to actually fly. I needed to get a job to be able to drive to the airfield. But yes, I took my very first flight at the age of 14, and it was just amazing. It was like I'd found heaven.
Oh, amazing. So how did you have any kind of background with this? How did you get into it initially? What was the inspiration to start?
My father was my initial inspiration. He always loved aviation and he built radio-controlled models. And when I was young, he built me a Paddington Bear flying on a marmalade sandwich. So it was no wonder I got inspired about it.
Brilliant. So tell us about this particular trip then. I know, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were kind of inspired to do it after being diagnosed with breast cancer. Are you okay now, health-wise?
Yes, thank goodness. I'm completely cancer-free, so absolutely.
Good stuff.
Yes, I fell in love with flying, and when I was learning to fly, I found all these amazing people that had done these wonderful trips around the world, like Lady Mildred Bruce and Lady Mary Heath and Sir Alex Henshaw. And you can see the theme there, and I realized, okay, you've got to have money and you've got to be titled. And then I found the wonderful Amy Johnson, and she was a secretary, and she became an engineer, and then she got a second-hand aeroplane and flew across the world. And her saying was, if I can, you can. And I had that little spark, and I thought, well, I've got to do it then, haven't I?
Amazing. So tell us about this particular trip then. Where did you start? How do you go about organising a trip like this?
Yes, it only took her 6 months to actually organise it and do it. It took me 15 years. And when I had the breast cancer, I kept trying to get a sponsor and I kept trying to save up. And then I had breast cancer and then my dad died. Aww. And I thought, right, that's it. I've got to throw everything at it and do it, because breast cancer had tried to kill me more than any adventurer ever has. So I set off from Biggin Hill on, as you say, May the 11th in my tiger moth. It took me a long time to save up to get my tiger moth. And I set off and I had to divert on the first trip because the weather was worse than it was forecast. It was 50 years worth weather across Europe. I then had an engine failure. I was threatened to be shot down in the Persian Gulf. It turned out to be a huge adventure, but it was most interesting, the people that I met. I was doing this completely for myself, my selfish trip that I'd wanted to do to emulate my hero. And yet the people that I met along the way were stunning and amazing.
Wow, what an experience. So how do you prepare for a trip like this?
Well, being a commercial pilot, of course, I've got all the skills to be able to book all the flight plans, do all the knowledge of how to do all the paperwork. But it's the permissions to get into the countries that are the most difficult, because you're not a tourist and you're not a working person. You're doing an adventure, and there isn't a box that you can tick in any of the emails for that. So, and it's kind of like, how do you explain it to somebody? You know, how do you explain a biplane to somebody in Turkey? It just doesn't sort of, it's really difficult. So yeah, the paperwork side of things was one of the most difficult things to do.
And just explain exactly what a tiger moth is.
Yes, if you look at the old, everybody knows sort of like a Spitfire with one wings. Well, a tiger moth was what you learnt in. So it's a very small aeroplane. It's got two sets of wings, a very small fuselage with one person sat in front, almost like old sidecar from a car sort of thing, and it sort of sits on its tail, so it's got its nose in the air. But I took out the front seat and put a huge fuel tank in there so that I could get across the oceans.
Gosh. And what's it like being in such a small plane on your own, obviously? I mean, it must be difficult to describe, but it's difficult for us to imagine.
Yes, I mean, I describe it to various people. If you're sat in a small toilet cubicle, that's the kind of, and you're trying to fold a big broadsheet newspaper, which people don't have these days. But if you're trying to fold a map, that was sort of like my little home for all of those hours. I mean, I loved it because it's open cockpit. That's the other thing. So you're out in the elements. You're wearing the old leather helmet with the goggles on. Again, almost like a motorbike. I absolutely loved it because it's my own little world. But it is very, people would think it'd be claustrophobic, but you're kind of sort of snug in there. I kind of feel like I'm a bit snug in my sort of little armchair in there.
Isn't it really cold with the open cockpit then?
Yes, it was freezing. And I set off in May and I'm traveling down to Australia. So you would think that I would be very, very hot and warm. But no, it was the worst weather across Europe for 50 years. I hadn't put my thermals on. I was freezing.
Oh, no.
Not good.
Oh, gosh. So how long did it take?
Well, I took 19 days. Amy Johnson took 19 days and 19 and a half days to get down to Australia. And I took 19 days and I only managed to get to Beirut. So you remember when the big drone was shot down in the Persian Gulf with the American drone?
Yeah.
I would have been traveling in those waters. My actual flight plan was where that drone was shot down. So I was completely solo. I was doing this trip completely by myself. I had no support airplane, but I was being given very good security advice on the telephone and on Zoom from people over in here in England, and they told me that I there was a very good possibility that I'd be shot down. So I decided I had to stop. And then, because again, going back to the permissions, I couldn't then move all my permissions because that was for that particular flight plan where I was going. So it was a very difficult decision what I then had to do.
Yeah. So tell us about the kind of obvious questions that I'm trying to get my head around, the idea of sleeping.
I know the two questions, yes.
Sleeping, eating, going to the toilet, all of that.
Yes,
kind of
absolutely. Well, you don't sleep in an open cockpit biplane because you've got the wind rushing by you. You're traveling at sort of 80 miles an hour. So it's like having the windows down when you're on a motorway. So there's no sleeping involved at all. Eating was very difficult because it was very bumpy because it was very cold. So I take the sort of a little sweets. I just used to have sweets. I do take a bottle of water with me and drink water. But then, of course, when you're hydrated, you need to dehydrate. But if it's good enough for the astronauts, then it's good enough for me. I wore the nappies because you can have these little cups that you can do. But again, trying to take your flight suit off and trying to do all that, I thought, no, good enough for the astronauts. I'm going to wear the adult nappies.
Brilliant. And you say, no, you can't sleep, as if it's just perfectly normal and okay to not be sleeping. But how do you not sleep?
Well, I wasn't flying for that long. You know, my longest flight was actually 5 hours.
Okay.
The longest flight I would have done was 7.5 hours across the Timor Sea.
Okay.
But the longest flight that I did was 5 hours over the Mediterranean. So I didn't actually need to sleep.
Okay, no, fair enough. Fair enough. So did you have all the places kind of planned that you were stopping and sleeping then? Was that all planned beforehand?
I didn't plan all of the places to sleep because with the weather and being a biplane, I can only fly in supposedly good weather. So therefore, I didn't book a sort of hotels or bed and breakfast or anything across because I wasn't guaranteed the dates that I was going to be there. So I would just get there and then book it. And then this is where it happened to be amazing because when I arrived in places like Romania and places and in Beirut, they'd actually put me up in the best hotels. I've never been in those hotels. And can you imagine, you're in your flight suit, you've been flying for hours, you've been wearing your adult nappy, you're probably not smelling the best, you're getting picked up by all these people who are congratulating you and taking you. Then they put you in a lovely taxi and send you to the best hotel in their country. And I'm walking up the stairs to the hotel, probably not smelling the best, thinking maybe they should have put me more in the down market sort of place. So that was all quite funny as well.
Oh, amazing. But how nice that you were being looked after like that. That's lovely.
Oh, it was, I cannot get over how generous people are when you're doing this. And this is what I was trying to raise awareness for breast cancer and for dyslexia. I'm dyslexic and I was helping them and giving talks as I was going along. But yes, the true nature of traveling is that you get help where you most need it. And people are so generous. And that was the thing that surprised me. I wasn't ready for that at all. I wasn't ready for the amount of love and pure sort of, yes, love that I was given. I've just met one of the people over at Fairford that was in Cyprus, and it was so lovely because I've now got all these friends across the world.
Oh, nice. So how did that all come about? Did you make contacts with lots of people beforehand, or were people doing all of that for you?
I tried to contract the flying clubs, but you have to land in a big airport first because of customs these days. I still have to go through all the same security as everybody does when you go on a normal flight, which is really quite funny when you're stood there in your flight suit. They don't know what to do with you, do the security guys. But yes, I have to do all of that. It's all exactly the same, which was really difficult for water because I wasn't allowed to take water through the security. So I had to try and arrange water on the other side. That was one of the things I hadn't sort of bargained for. But yes, so I tried to meet up with various flying clubs, and I had those stationed in various countries. But then in places in Beirut, I suddenly was then being introduced to lots of other people, like the English ladies, who then introduced me to the dyslexia people and all kinds of stuff. And it just sort of snowballs when you're there.
Yeah. And presumably you can't pack much. I mean, you really can't take much luggage and clothes. How many different outfits did you have? I guess it's the least of your worries.
No, not at all. What do you wear? I mean, this is it. You're, as I say, you're walking in your flight suit, but then you're invited to the Queen's, you know, dinner at the nighttime. So what are you supposed to wear? You can't turn up in your flight suit. So, and all of these explorers had taken their cocktail dresses. So I thought, right, okay, I've got to take my one dress. And I packed it so that I packed a sort of bags that I sat on, because normally you sit on cushions in the actual airplane to make it comfy. But I decided to sit on the life raft and then put my clothes packed in on that as well. So that's how I made my cushion. And so I was very pleased when I emerged with a cocktail dress. It was and things. But I didn't take that many sort of pants and knickers and things like that. So I had to wash those wherever I was going.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. You know, I had all this beautiful scenery and fantastic places that I'm going to. And the biggest hit I got on social media was when I was washing my socks. Because I still had to wash my socks as I was going across the world.
It's funny, isn't it? What entertains people?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Yeah, and I know I needed to do it after a few days because the security guards would get further and further away from me.
Brilliant. So, what's next for you? How do you follow an adventure like this?
Well, I didn't actually make it. Not to spoil any of the fun of the book, but I didn't make it. I only got as far as Beirut. So I'm rebuilding the Tiger Moth at the moment. I also realized, because I had two engine failures, I didn't know enough of the engineering side to even just tell the engineers when they flew out to meet me what to bring with them to help fix it. So I've been learning more of the engineering. I'm rebuilding her, and then I'm looking for a sponsor to do it bigger and better and do the whole thing.
Wow, exciting. So hopefully you'll be doing it in under 12 years.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So next year is the 95th anniversary of Amy Johnson doing it, but in 6 years' time, it's 100 years anniversary, and there's going to be quite a few celebrations, and there's going to be a show that a couple of my friends now are doing, one of the Amy Johnson experts and things like that, that I've been very kindly invited to. So I'm hoping that I can sort of put it together for that. That would be my ultimate plan.
Yeah, exciting. Well, best of luck with it all. If listeners want to get a copy of the book, Solo to Darwin in the Footsteps of Amy Johnson, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Amanda Harrison, who we've been chatting with today. Amanda, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.